represent glowing eyes had terrified the boy he'd been. But that hadn't been the worst. The worst had been what they'd done to try to become Radiance, the things they'd pushed their members to do. His mother had been one of those. "It turned dark," Teft said. "The things my people, my family, did. Well, I was around 8 when I went to the City Lord. I told him, thinking he'd run the worst of the troublemakers out of town. I didn't realize."
"What non was your family?" Kaladin asked.
6th, Teft said. "Should have been high enough to avoid execution. My mother was already dead by then, and my father..."
He glanced up at the rest of them and felt their sympathy. Well, he didn't want any storming sympathy.
"Don't look at me like that. It was a long time ago, like I said. I eventually joined the military to get away from that town. It haunted me for a long time. But ultimately, you know what? You know Kalek's own storming truth? Because of what my parents did and taught me, I was able to save you, Cal. They won in the end. They were right in the end."
He picked up his soup and forced himself to begin eating it.
"We can't storm and see the future like Renarin can. We've got to do what we think is best and be fine with that. It's all a man can do."
"You think we should keep fighting?" Relaine said.
"I think," Teft said, "that we need to rescue those Radiants. Maybe we don't need to fight, but we've got to get them out. I don't like the smell of what you've been telling me. Lined up like that, watched over. The enemy is planning something for our friends."
"I can wake them," Lift said, "but they ain't gonna be in fighting shape. And I'll need a whole bunch of food, like an entire chawl's worth."
"If we can wake them," Relaine said, "we don't need to fight. We can have them run. Escape."
"How?" Kaladin asked. "We can't possibly hope to get all the way to the Oath Gates."
"There's a window," Relaine said, "in the infirmary room. We can break it, maybe, and escape out that way."
"To fall hundreds of feet," Kaladin said.
"That might take the Windrunners out of the influence of the tower," Teft said with a grunt.
He thought about dropping hundreds of feet, not knowing if his powers would reactivate before he hit bottom.
"I'd try it, and prove it can be done. The rest of you could watch and see if I fly up in the distance. If I do, you could follow."
Kaladin rubbed his forehead.
"Assuming we could break the glass, assuming we could get enough stormlight to infuse the Windrunners, assuming they're strong enough after being incapacitated for so long to try something that insane.
Look, I like that we're exploring ideas, but we need to take time to consider all our options."
Teft nodded.
"You're the officer. I leave the decision to you."
"I'm not an officer any longer, Teft," Kaladin said.
Teft let the objection slide, though it wasn't completely wrong. One thing a good sergeant knew was when to let the officer be wrong, and Kaladin was an officer. He'd acted like one even when he'd been a slave, like he'd been raised by a bunch of Lydies or something. His official status or rank couldn't change what he was.
"For now," Kaladin said, "we wait. If we have to, we will break in and rescue the Radiants. But first we need to recover, we need to plan, and we need to find a way to contact the Queen. I'd like her input."
"I might be able to get in to see her," Relaine said. "They have servants cart food and water to her and her scholars. Venli's people are often assigned that detail, and I could hide my tattoo and substitute for one of them."
"Good," Kaladin said. "That would be great. And while we wait, we don't do anything too rash. Agreed?"
The others nodded, even Lift and Dabid. Teft, too, though this wasn't the sort of situation where you had luxuries like time to come up with the perfect plan. Teft determined he'd just have to be ready to act. Take that next storming step. You couldn't change the past, only the future. He ate his soup as the conversation turned to lighter topics and found himself smiling. Smiling because they were still together,
smiling because he'd made the right decision to stay in the tower when Cal needed him, smiling because he had survived so long without moss or drink and was able to wake up and see color to the world, smiling because, for how bad everything could be, some things were still good. He shifted as Fenderana poked him. He looked over and caught her grinning as well.
"Fine," he muttered. "You were storming right. You have always been right."
Teft was worth saving.
92. A gift.
"The bond is what keeps us alive. You sever that, and we will slowly decompose into ordinary souls, with no valid connection to the physical or spiritual realms. Capture one of us with your knives, and you won't be left with a spren in a jar, foolish ones. You'll be left with a being that eventually fades away into the beyond."
Venli stood dutifully beside Raboniel, acting as her voice as daily reports were delivered. Mostly Venli was here to interpret. While Raboniel had learned Alethi quite well, she claimed to have always been talented at languages. Many of their current group of regals spoke Azish, having been parchmen in that region. Today, Raboniel took the reports while sitting on a throne at the mouth of the hallway with the murals. This meant they were at the bottom of the stairwell leading upward to the ground floor. Venli couldn't help but be reminded of the humans who had died in the last hopeless push to reach the crystal pillar. Those memories were laced with the scents of burning flesh and the sounds of bodies hitting the ground. Venli glanced at the freshly built portion of steps, hastily constructed with scaffolding underneath to replace the part broken during the fighting. Then she attuned indifference, a rhythm of odium. She had to be certain those rhythms continue to punctuate her words, though lately they made her mouth feel coated in oil.
"The Lady of Wishes hears your report," Venli said to the current regal, who stood bowed before them, "and commends you on your passion for the search. But you are wrong, she says. The Windrunner is alive. You are to redouble your efforts." The regal, wearing a sleek form known as relay form, often worn by scouts, bowed lower. Then she retreated up the steps.
"I believe that is the last of them, Ancient One," Venli said to Raboniel. Raboniel nodded and rose from her throne, then walked into the hallway leading to the two scholar rooms. Her specially tailored Alethi-style dress fluttered as she walked, accentuating the lean, thin pieces of carapace armor along her arms and chest. Venli followed. The fused hadn't indicated she should withdraw. Though Raboniel had a workstation and desk set up at the end of the hallway, she always preferred to take reports out near the stairwell. It was as if Raboniel lived two separate lives here. The commander general of the Singer armies seemed so different from the scholar who cared nothing for the war. The second Raboniel was the truer one, Venli thought.
"Last listener," Raboniel mused. "Last no more. Your people were the only group of singers to successfully reject fused rule and make their own kingdom."
"Were there unsuccessful attempts?" Venli dared ask, to craving.
"Many," Raboniel said. She hummed to ridicule. "Do not make the same mistake as the humans, assuming that the singers have always been of one mind. Yes, forms change our thinking at times, but they merely enhance what's inside. They bring out different aspects of our personalities. Humans have always tried to claim that we are nothing but drones controlled by odium. They like that lie because it makes them feel better about killing us. I wonder if it assuaged their guilt on the day they stole the minds of those they enslaved." Raboniel's desk was nestled right up against the shield, which, once a bright blue, had grown dark and violet. Raboniel sat and began looking through her notes.
"Do you regret what you personally did, last listener?" she asked to spite. "Do you hate yourself for your betrayal of your people?"
Timber pulsed. Venli should have lied. Instead, she said,
"Yes, ancient one." "That is well," Raboniel said. "We all pay dearly for our choices, and the pain lingers when one is immortal. I suspect you still crave the chance to become effused, but I have found in you a second soul, a regretful soul. I am pleased to discover it, not because I admire one who regrets their service, and you should know Odium does not look favorably upon second guessing. Nevertheless, I had thought you to be like so many others, abject in your cravings, ambitious to a fault."
"I was that femalean," Venli whispered. "Once." Raboniel glanced at her sharply, and Venli realized her mistake. She'd said it to the lost, one of the old rhythms that regals weren't supposed to be able to hear. Raboniel narrowed her eyes and hummed to spite.
"And what are you now?"
"Confused," Venli said, also to spite. "Ashamed. I used to know what I wanted, and it seemed so simple. And then..."
"Then?"
"They all died, ancient one. People I loved dearly, without realizing the depth of my feelings. My sister, my once mate, my mother, all just gone because of me." Timber pulsed reassuringly, but Venli didn't want reassurance or forgiveness at that moment.
"I understand," Raboniel said.
Venli stepped closer, then knelt beside the table. "Why do we fight?" she asked to Craving. "Ancient one, if it costs so much, why fight? Why suffer so much to secure a land we will not be able to enjoy because all those we love will be gone?"
"It is not for us that we fight," Raboniel said. "It is not for our comfort that we destroy, but for the comfort of those who come after. We sing rhythms of pain so they may know rhythms of peace."
"And will he ever let us sing to peace?" Raboniel did not respond. She shuffled through a few papers on her table.
"You have served me well," she said. "A little distractedly, perhaps. I ascribe that to your true allegiance being to Leshwe, and your reports to her interfering with your duties to me."
"I am sorry, ancient one." Raboniel hummed to indifference.
"I should have arranged for a regular meeting for you to give her your spy reports. Maybe I could have written them for you, to save time. At any rate, I cannot fault you for loyalty to her."
"She doesn't like you very much, ancient one."
"She is afraid of me because she is short-sighted," Raboniel said. "But Leshwe is among the best we have, for she has managed to not only remember why we fight, but to feel it. I am fond of Leshwe. She makes me think that once we win, there will be some fused who can rule effectively, even if she is too soft-hearted for the brutalities we now must perpetuate."
Raboniel selected a paper off the desk and handed it to Venli.
"Here, payment for your services. My time in the tower runs short. I will finish unmaking the sibling, and then we'll be on to other tasks. So I will now dismiss you. If you survive what comes next, there is a chance you may find some peace of your own, Venli."
Venli took the paper, humming to Craving. "Ancient one," she said. "I am a weak servant. Because I am so confused about what I want, I do not deserve your praise."
"In part, this is true," Raboniel said. "But I like confusion. Too often we belittle it as a lesser passion. But confusion leads a scholar to study further and push for secrets. No great discovery was ever made by a femalean or malean who was confident they knew everything. Confusion can mean you have realized your weaknesses. I forget its value sometimes. Yes, it can lead to paralysis, but also to truth and better passions. We imagine that great people were always great, never questioning. I think they would hum to ridicule at that idea. Regardless, take that gift and be off with you. I have much to do in the coming hours." Venli nodded, scanning the paper as she rose. She expected a writ of authority, given by fused to favored servants, granting them extra privileges or requisitions. Indeed, there was exactly that on the front, but on the back was a hastily sketched map. What was this? "I had hoped to find good maps of the tower," Raboniel noted to Fury. "But Navani had some burned and disposed of the others, though she feigns ignorance. This, however, is a report from a human scout who was flying along the eastern rim of the Shattered Plains." Upon closer inspection, the page read in the human female and writing system, "It appears the group we assumed were Natan migrants are instead Parshendi, a group of a few thousand, with a large number of children." Venli read it again.
"Did some of your kind leave?" Raboniel asked, absently. "Before the coming of the Everstorm?"
"Yes. Rebels, who did not want the new forms, along with the children and the elderly, they escaped into the chasms. Shortly before the storms met and the floodwaters came, they should have been completely destroyed."
"Should have. What a hateful phrase. It has caused me more grief than you could know."
She began writing in one of her notebooks.
"Perhaps it has treated you with kindness."
Venli clutched the paper and ran, not giving Raboniel a proper farewell. 93. Strong enough.
"I felt it happen to Jezreel. You think you captured him, but our god is splintered, our oath pact severed. He faded over the weeks and is gone now, beyond your touch at long last. I should welcome the same. I do not. I fear you."
Formless awoke early on the day of Adolin's final judgment. It was time. She slipped from the bed and began dressing. Unfortunately, she'd moved a little too quickly as Adolin stirred and yawned.
"Vale's clothing," he noted.
Formless didn't respond, still dressing.
"Thank you," Adolin said,
"for Shallan's support last night. I needed her."
"There are some things only she can do," Formless said.
"Would that be a problem, now that Shallan no longer existed?"
"What's wrong, Vale?" Adolin said,
sitting up in bed.
"You seem different."
Formless pulled on her coat.
"Nothing's different. I'm the same old Vale."
"Don't you use my name," Vale thought deep inside. "Don't you dare lie to him like that."
Formless stopped. She'd thought Vale locked away.
"No," Adolin said. "Something is different. Become Shallan for a moment. I could use her optimism today."
"Shallan is too weak," Formless said.
"Is she?" You know how troubled her emotions are. She suffers every day from a traitorous mind. She put on her hat. I knew a one-armed swordsman once, Adolin said, yawning. He had trouble in duels because he couldn't hold a shield or two-hand a sword. Obviously, Formless said, turning and rummaging in her trunk. But I tell you, Adolin said, no one could arm wrestle like Doralyn. No one. What is your point? Who do you think is stronger? Adolin asked. The man who has walked easily his entire life? Or the man with no legs? The man who must pull himself by his arms? She didn't reply, fiddling with the communication cube, then tucking Moraes' knife into her pocket, along with her gemstone of stormlight. We don't always see strength the right way, Adolin said. Like, who is the better swimmer? The sailor who drowns, giving in at long last to the current after hours of fighting? Or the scribe who has never stepped into the water? Do you have a point with these questions? Formless snapped, slamming her trunk closed. Because I don't see one. I know. I'm sorry, Adolin grimaced. I'm not explaining it well. I don't think Shallan is as weak as you say. Weakness doesn't make someone weak, you see. It's the opposite. That is foolishness, she said. Return to sleep. Your trial is in a couple hours, and you shouldn't be fatigued for it. Formless stalked out into the living room. There she hid by the side of the door and waited to see if Adolin followed. Pattern perked up from where he'd been sitting at the desk, and Formless quieted him with a glare. Adolin didn't come out. She heard him sigh loudly, but he remained in bed. Good. She had to act quickly. Formless needed to give him this last gift. The gift of winning here in lasting integrity. She owed the memory of Shallan that much. I know what you're doing, Vale whispered. I've finally figured it out. Formless froze. She checked on Radiant, tucked into the prison of her mind, trying to break free but unable to speak. So why could Vale? Well, she could ignore a voice or two. Formless sat at the desk and sketched the layout of the judge's home. They'd pasted off yesterday and peeked in windows. With her talent for spatial awareness, this floor plan should be accurate. You aren't a new persona, Vale thought. If you were, you couldn't draw like that. You can lie to yourself, but not to me. Formless froze again. Was this what she wanted? What she really wanted? She wasn't sure of anything anymore. There were so many questions. Why was Vale able to talk? Who had killed Iole? How would she extricate herself from Adolin, from the Radiance? Was that the life she desired? Formless steeled herself, quieting the questions. She placed a hand on her forehead, breathing deeply. Pattern stepped over, so Formless closed the sketchbook and slid it into her satchel.
Vale? Pattern asked. What are you doing?
It has to happen today, Formless said. She checked the clock. Soon, before the judge leaves his quarters. She gripped the gemstone she'd hidden in her pocket.
Vale, Pattern said. This is not a good idea.
He is right, Vale thought. He is right, Shallan. I am Formless, she thought back. No, you're not, Shallan.
I wouldn't be so quick to tell me what is right and wrong, Pattern, Formless said to him. We still haven't dealt with your betrayal and your lies. Perhaps you want the best judge of morality and should leave that to me. His pattern slowed, and his shoulders slumped, and he stepped backward, as if he wanted to vanish into the shadows. Formless drew out a little stormlight, savoring the sensation of it inside her veins. Then she performed a light weaving. It worked. Formless was a composite of the three. a single person with Shallan's drawing and light-weaving abilities, Radiant's determination and ability to get things done, and Vale's ability to push aside the pain, Vale's ability to see the truth. The best of all three of them. Lies, Shallan, Vale thought. Storms. I should have seen this. I should have known. She glanced at herself in the mirror and found the light weaving to be perfect. She looked exactly like Lucintia, the Honor Spren woman. She even gave off the same faint glow. This was going to be so easy. Formless packed her drawing tools in case she needed to quickly sketch a new face. A light weaving disguised her satchel as a cloth bag, like the ones the Honor Spren used. Bells from below announced that it was about an hour until the trial. She crossed the room, passing Pattern, who had withdrawn to the corner. He stood in the shadows, his pattern moving lethargically.
"What's happening?" he said. "Something is very wrong with you, Shallan. I have handled this so poorly. I talked to Wit yesterday, and he—"
"You're still doing that?" Formless said. "You're still disobeying me?" Pattern pulled away further. "I've had enough of you," Formless hissed. "Stay here and cover for me with Adolin. We'll talk about this at length after the trial." She took a deep breath and peeked out to make sure no one was watching. They might wonder why Lucintia had been in Shallan's house, then slipped out and began crossing the southern plain. The fortress was quiet. Spren didn't sleep, but they did have less active periods. They would congregate at night in the homes of friends, leaving the walkways of the fortress relatively unwatched. A few leaves fluttered through the open air between the four sides. Formless tried not to look at the other three planes, three cities making an impossible box around her. She wasn't good at—
"Vale," a voice said behind her. "I need to explain. I must tell you the truth.
She groaned and turned. Pattern was following her like a barely weaned axe-hound pup. "You'll give away my disguise," she snapped at him. He stopped, his pattern slowing.
"You must know what Wit said," Pattern replied. "He is so wise. He seems to like you and hate everyone else. Ha, ha, he made fun of me. It was very funny. I am like a chicken. Ha, ha."
Formless closed her eyes and sighed.
"He said to tell you that we trust you," Pattern said, "and love you. He said I should tell you that you deserve trust and love. And you do. I'm sorry I've been lying for a very long time. I'm so sorry. I didn't think you could handle it."
"Shallan couldn't," she said. "Go to the room and wait. I'll deal with you later." She strode away, and fortunately he didn't follow. It was time to become the woman she'd been building toward ever since she left her home to steal from Yasna. Formless could finally join the Ghostbloods. She didn't care about Shallan's past. Let it sleep. She could be like Vale, who didn't have to worry about such things.
"You're pretending to be like me," Vale thought. "But Wit is right. You deserve to be loved, Shallan. You do."
The High Judge's quarters were all the way at the top of the plain, near the battlements. It was difficult to ignore the strange geometry up here, past the parks and the trees, because the sky was so close. She wanted to spend time drawing it, but of course she wasn't like that anymore. She needed to find all this disorienting and strange, like Vale. It helped to focus on the target, a small building near the corner of the wall. She passed several Honor Spren, but not many. She waved to those who waved to her, but mostly strode forward with a sense of purpose. Once Formless arrived, She loitered near the house, glancing around until she could be reasonably certain no one was looking. That was difficult, with multiple planes to watch. At least the plan was simple. Step up to the door, soul cast the doorknob into smoke to get past the lock, sneak in and make her way to the back room, which was the high judge's study, knife him before he could react, then take his place for the trial. This was her last step. This was the end.
"I," Radiant said, her voice distant. "I killed Ile."
Formless froze in place.
"I saw," Radiant whispered, "that you were about to do it, that you had poison secreted in your satchel. So I stepped in to protect you, so you didn't have to do it, to prevent what is happening to you now, Shallan."
She squeezed her eyes shut. No. No, she wouldn't back down. She had to do this, to end it, to end the wavering. She opened her eyes, strode up to the door, and grabbed the knob with her free hand. It vanished beneath her touch. Soul casting really was easier on this side. The knob barely cared that she asked it to change. She pushed open the door. The room inside was packed. Pieces of furniture stacked atop one another, rolled tapestries, knick-knacks and mementos, like a small glass chicken on the windowsill, and a pile of dusty letters on a table. Formless shut the door with a quiet motion. The windows provided enough light to see by, and she could see the glow of candlelight beneath the room's other door, the one that led into the high judge's study. Kalek was here. She revealed Moraes's knife, then stepped forward. As she did so, she felt a coldness, like a sharp breeze. Stormlight left her in a rush. Formless paused, then glanced over her shoulder. Vale stood behind her.
"I know why you're doing this, Shallan," Vale said.
"There's no fourth persona. Not yet. You've given yourself another name, so you can tuck away the pain. You take that step, though, and it will be real." "This is who I want to be," Formless said. "Let me go."
"You're running again," Vale said. "You think you don't deserve Adolin, or your place as a Radiant? You're terrified that if your friends knew what you truly were, they'd turn away from you, leave you. So you're going to leave them first. That's why you kept spending time with the Ghostbloods. That's why you're here. You see this as an out from your life. You figure if you become the despicable person the darkness whispers that you have been, then it will all be decided. No going back. Decisions made.
Formless. Formless was just Shallan. And Shallan wanted to do this. She wanted to show them what she truly was, so it would be over.
"I can't be Shallan," she whispered. "Shallan is weak."
Shallan put her hands to her eyes and trembled. Vale felt her emotions in a sudden wave of pain, frustration, shame, and confusion. It made her shake as well.
"Who is a better swimmer?" Vale whispered. "It's the sailor who has swum his entire life, even if he encounters rough seas that challenge him. Who is the stronger man? It is the man who must pull himself by his arms. And that swordsman with one arm? He was probably the best in raw skill. He couldn't win because of his disadvantages, but he wasn't weaker than the others." Shallan stilled. "Adolin is right," Vale said. "He's always been right about you. Tell me, who is the strongest of mind? The woman whose emotions are always on her side, or the woman whose own thoughts betray her? You have fought this fight every day of your life, Shallan, and you are not weak."
"Aren't I?" Shallan demanded, spinning. "I killed my own father. I strangled him with my own hands."
The words cut deep,
like a spike through the heart. Vale winced visibly. But that cut to the heart somehow let warmth bleed out, flowing through her.
You have borne that truth for a year and a half, Shallan, Vale said, stepping forward. You kept going. You were strong enough. You made the oath.
And mother? Shallan snapped. Do you remember the feel of the blade forming in our hands for the first time, Vale?
I do.
Do you remember the horror I felt at the strike, which I never meant to make? Her mother, with stark red hair, a length of metal in her chest as her beautiful green eyes turned to coal, burning out of her face. Shallan's voice, screaming at what she'd done, screaming, begging to take it back, wishing she were dead, wishing, wishing. Another spike to the heart, more warmth bleeding out, blood flowing with thunderous heartbeats. Vale always felt so cold, but today she felt warm. Warm with pain, warm with life.
You can bear it, Vale whispered.
She stepped forward, eye to eye with Shallan.
You can remember it. Our weakness doesn't make us weak. Our weakness makes us strong. For we had to carry it all these years.
No, Shallan said, her voice growing soft.
No, I can't.
You can, Vale whispered. I've protected you all these years. But it's time for me to leave. It's time for me to be done.
I can't, Shallan said. I'm too weak.
I don't think you are. Take the memories. Vale reached out her hand. Take them back, Shallan. Shallan wavered. Formless had vanished like a puff of smoke, revealing all her lies. And there was Vale's hand, inviting, offering to prove that Shallan was strong. Shallan took her hand.
Memories flooded her. Playing in the gardens as a child, meeting a cryptic, a beautiful spiraling spren that dimpled the stone. Wonderful times spent hidden among the foliage in their special place. The cryptic encouraged her to become strong enough to help her family, to stand against the terrible darkness spreading through it. Such a blessed time, full of hope and joy, and truths spoken easily with the solemnity and wonder of a child. That companion had been a true friend to an isolated child, a girl who suffered parents who constantly fought over her future. Her spren, a spren who could talk, a spren she could confide in, a companion. And that companion had not been Pattern. It had been a different cryptic. One who. Shallan fell to her knees, arms wrapped around herself, trembling.
Oh, storms! Oh, God of oaths! She felt a hand on her shoulder.
It's all right, Shallan, Vale whispered. It's all right.
I know what you are, Shallan whispered. You're the blankness upon my memories. The part of me that looks away. The part of my mind that protects me from my past.
Of course I am, Vale said. I'm your Vale, Shallan.
She squeezed Shallan's shoulder, then turned toward the closed door. Had Kalek heard them talking? Or had they even spoken out loud? Shallan surged to her feet.
No, it hurt too much. Didn't it make more sense to become what Marais wanted? Adolin would hate her for what she did. Dalinar would hate her. Shallan represented the very thing they all said they would never do, the thing they blamed for all of their problems, the thing that had doomed humankind. She was worthless. She reached for the doorknob.
You can bear it, Radiant whispered.
No,
She could become formless and join the Ghost Bloods wholeheartedly, become the woman she'd created for herself, the strong spy who lived a double life without it bothering her. She could be confident and collected and painless and perfect.
Strength before weakness, Radiant said.
Not a woman who had...
Be strong.
Shallan turned, breathing out, and stormlight exploded from her like her life's own blood. It painted the room before her, coloring it, changing it to a lush garden, covered in bright green vines and shale bark of pink and red. Within it, a hidden place where a girl cried. The girl wept, then screamed, then said the terrible words.
I don't want you! I hate you! I'm done! You never existed! You are nothing! And I am finished!
Shallan didn't turn away. She wouldn't. She felt the ripping sensation again, the terrible pain and the awful horror. She hadn't known what she was doing, not truly, but she had done it.
I killed her, Shallan whispered. I killed my Spren, my wonderful, beautiful, kindly Spren. I broke my oaths, and I killed her.
Vale stood with her hands clasped before her. It's going to hurt, Vale warned. I'm sorry for the pain, Shallan. I did what I could, but I did it for too long.
I know,
Shallan said. But I have no strength that you do not, Shallan, Vale said. You are me. We are me.
Vale became stormlight, glowing brightly. The color faded from her, becoming pure white. Her memories integrated into Shallan's. Her skills became Shallan's. And Shallan recognized everything she had done. She remembered preparing the needle hidden in her satchel to kill Iole. She saw her past, and her growing worry in all its self-destructive horror. Saw herself growing into the lie that she could never belong with Adolin and the Radiance. So she began searching for another escape. But that escape wasn't strength. This was strength. She closed her eyes, bearing the burden of those memories. Not only of what she'd done recently, but what she'd done in the garden that day. Terrible memories. Her memories. As there was nothing left for Vale to protect Shallan from feeling, she began to fade. But as she faded, one last question surfaced. Did I do well?
Yes, Shallan whispered.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And then, like any other illusion that was no longer needed, Vale puffed away. Shallan took a deep breath, her pain settling in.
Storms. Pattern was here. Not her new pattern, the first one. The Deadeye.
Shallan needed to find her. Later. For now, she had a job to do. As she gathered herself, the door to the study clicked open, and light spilled around a figure. An Alethi man with wispy hair and weary eyes. Shallan knew that expression well.
I see, Kalek said. So you are the one sent to kill me?
I was sent for that purpose, she said, holding up the knife. She set it on a nearby table. Sent by someone who didn't realize I'd be strong enough to say no. You're safe from me, Kalek. He walked over and picked up the knife in timid fingers.
So this is like the one they used on Jezreel?
I don't know, Shallan said honestly. A group called the Ghost Bloods wanted me to use that on you.
Old Thydakar has always wanted my secrets, Kalek said. I thought it would be the man, your husband, who came for me. I wonder if he knows I've had trouble fighting these days. It's so hard to decide. To do anything, really.
Is that why you've been so hard on Adolin? Shallan asked.
At the trial?
Kalek shook his head.
You two stumbled into a little war of ideologies. The older honor spren, they're so frightened of what happened to their predecessors. But the young ones want to go fight.
I can tell you about the people who sent me, Shallan said. We can share information. But first I have a request. You're about to convict my husband in this sham of a trial. I'd like you to reconsider.
Kalek wiped his brow with a handkerchief from his pocket.
So many questions, he said, as if he hadn't heard her request. Who else knows I'm here? I feel like I'm close to finding a way off world. Maybe I should wait.
I have information that could help you, Shallan said. But I want to trade. There isn't much time for us to...
She was interrupted as the door slammed open, revealing several honor spren, including Lucintia, the one Shallan had impersonated. She gestured aggressively at Shallan, who stepped back, reaching into her pocket for her gemstone. It was done. Somehow, in what she'd done with Vale, she'd used it all up.
Attempting to influence the course of the trial, Lucintia demanded. Colluding with the judge?
She was doing nothing of the sort, Kalek said, stepping up beside Shallan. She was bringing me news from the physical realm. And I'd have you not barge into my quarters, thank you very much.
Lucintia stopped, but then looked over her shoulder toward a bearded male honor spren. Shallan recognized him as Sakir, the one who had acted as prosecutor against Adolin on the first day of the trial. An important spren, perhaps the most important in the fortress, and one of the oldest ones.
I think, honored one, Sakir said softly, that you might be having another bout of your weakness. We shall have to sequester you, I'm afraid. For your own good.
94. Sacrifice.
Nevertheless, I'm writing answers for you here because something glimmers deep within me. A fragment of a memory of what I once was. I was there when Bar-Edo Mishram was captured. I know the truth of the Radiance, the Recreants, and the Nile Spren.
Adolin made no effort to arrive early to the last day of the trial. Indeed, each footstep felt leaden as he trudged toward the forum. He could see from a distance that the place was crowded, with even more spren gathered at the top of the steps than yesterday. Nearly every honor spren in the fortress had come to watch him be judged. Though he didn't relish facing them, he also couldn't give up this opportunity. It was his last chance to speak for himself, for his people. He had to believe that some of them were listening. And if he lost, if he was condemned to imprisonment, would he let Shallan rescue him as she'd offered? If I did, he thought, I would prove what the leaders of the Honor Spren have been saying all along. Men aren't worthy of trust. What if the only way to win here was to accept their judgment, to spend years in a cell? After all, what else are you good for, Adolin? The world needed Radiance, not princes. Particularly not ones who had refused the throne. Perhaps the best thing he could do for humanity was become a living testimony of their honor. That thought troubled him as he reached the crowd. They parted for him, nudging one another, falling silent as he descended. Storms, I wasn't built for problems like this, Adolin thought. He hadn't slept well, and he worried about the way Shallan had been acting lately. She wasn't sitting in her spot, and neither was Pattern. Was she going to skip this most important day of the trial? He was about halfway down the steps when he noticed another oddity. Kalek wasn't there. Sakir, the aged honor spren with the long beard, had taken his place. He waved for Adolin to continue. Adolin reached the floor of the forum and walked over to the judge's seat. Where is Kalek?
The Holy One is indisposed, Sekir said. Your wife went to him in secret and tried to influence the course of the trial.
Adolin felt a spike of joy. So that was what she'd been up to.
Do not smile, Sekir said. We discovered a weapon of curious design, perhaps used to intimidate the Holy One. Your wife is being held, and the Holy One is suffering from his long time as a herald. We have relieved him as High Judge, and I will sit in his place. You will find the documentation on your seat to be read to you if you wish. The trial will continue under my direction. I am a far lesser being, but I will not be as lax as he was.
Great, Adolin thought. Wonderful. He tried to find a way to use this to his advantage. Could he stall? Make some kind of plea? He looked at the audience and saw trouble. Division. Perhaps he was a fool, but it seemed like some of them wanted to listen. Wanted to believe him. Those felt fewer than yesterday. So many others watched him with outright hostility. So how could Adolin reach them? Sekir started the trial by calling for silence, something Kalek had never bothered to do. Apparently the hush that fell over the crowd wasn't enough, for Sekir had three different Spren ejected for whispering to one another. That done, the overstuffed Spren stood up and read off a prepared speech. And storms did it go on. Windy passages about how Adolin had brought this upon himself, about how it was good that humans finally had a chance to pay for their sins. "Do we need this?" Adolin interrupted, as Sekir paused for effect. "We all know what you're going to do. Be on with it." The new High Judge waved to the side. A Spren stepped up beside Adolin, a white cloth in her hands. A gag. She pulled it tight between her hands, as if itching for a chance.
"You may speak during the questioning of the witness," Sekir said. "The defendant is not allowed to interrupt the judge."
Fine. Adolin settled into parade rest. He didn't have an enlisted man's experience with standing at attention, but Zael had forced him to learn this stance anyway. He could hold it. Let them see him bear their lashes without complaint. His determination in that regard lasted until Sekir, at long last, finished his speech and called for the final witness to be revealed. It was Maya. Amuna led her by the hand, forcing back the watching honor spren. Though Adolin had gone to see Maya each morning and they'd let him do his exercises with her, bars had separated them. They hadn't otherwise allowed him to interact with her, claiming Deadeyes did best when it was quiet. If so, why were they dragging her into the middle of a crowd? Adolin stepped forward, but the honor spren at his side snapped the gag in warning. He forced himself back into parade rest and clenched his jaw. Maya didn't seem any worse for the attention. She walked with that customary sightless stare, completely oblivious to the whispering crowd. Sekir didn't hush them this time. The bearded honor spren smiled as he regarded the stir Amuna and Maya made. They placed Maya on her podium, and she turned and seemed to notice Adolin, for she cocked her head. Then, as if only now aware of it, she regarded the crowded audience. She shrank down, hunching her shoulders, and glanced around with quick, jerky motions. He tried to catch her gaze and reassure her with a smile, but she was too distracted. Damnation! Adolin hadn't hated the honor spren despite their tricks, but this started him seething. How dare they use Maya as part of their spectacle? Not all of them, he reminded himself, reading the mood of the crowd. Some sat quietly, others whispered. And more than a few near the top wore stormy expressions. No, they didn't care for this move either.
"You may speak now, prisoner," Sekir said to Adolin. "Do you recognize this Deadeye?"
"Why are you questioning me?" Adolin said.
She is supposed to give witness, and I'm supposed to question her. Yet you've chosen a witness who cannot answer your questions.
I will guide this discussion, Sakir said, as is my right as judge in the case of a witness too young or otherwise incapable of a traditional examination.
Adolin sought out Blended, a single black figure in a sea of glowing white ones. She nodded. This was legal. There were so many laws she hadn't had time to explain, but it wasn't her fault. He suspected he couldn't have understood every detail of the law, even with years of preparation.
Now,
Sakir said,
do you know this Spren?
You know I do, Adolin snapped. This is Maya Lauren. She is my friend.
Your friend, you say? Sakir asked. And what does this friendship entail? Do you perhaps have dinner together? Participate in friendly chats around the campfire?
We exercise together.
Exercise?
Sakir said, standing from his seat behind the judge's table.
You made a weapon of her. She is not your friend, but a convenient tool, a weapon by which you slay other men. Your kind never asks permission of shard blades. You take them as prizes won in battle, then apply them as you wish. She is not your friend, Adolin Colin. She is your slave.
Yes, Adolin admitted. He looked to Maya, then turned away.
Yes, Storm you. We didn't know they were Spren at first, but even now that we do, we use them. We need to. Because you need to kill,
Sekir said, walking up to Adolin.
Humans are monsters, with a lust for death that can never be sated. You thrive upon the terrible emotions of the unmade. You don't fight odium. You are odium.
Your point is made, Adolin said more softly. Let Maya go. Pass your judgment.
Sekir stepped up to him, meeting his eyes.
Look at her, Adolin said, gesturing. She's terrified.
Indeed, Maya had shrunk down further and was twisting about as if to try to watch all the members of the audience at once. She turned so violently, in fact, that Amuna and another honor spren stepped up to take her arms, perhaps to prevent her from fleeing.
You want this to be easy, do you?
Sakir asked Adolin, speaking in a softer voice.
You don't deserve easy. I had this fortress working in an orderly, organized manner before you arrived. You have no idea the frustration you have caused me, human.
The honor spren stepped away from Adolin and faced the crowd, thrusting his hand toward Maya.
Behold this spren,
Sekir commanded.
See what was done to her by humans. This Colin asks us to offer ourselves for bonds again. He asks us to trust again. It is vital, then, that we examine carefully the results of our last time trusting men.
Maya began to thrash, a low growl rising in her throat. She did not like being constrained.
This is a trial by witness, Adolin shouted at Sekir. You are interfering and go too far.
Blended nodded, and other honor spren in the crowd had stood up at the objection. They agreed. Whatever the law was, Sekir was stretching it here.
This witness,
Sekir said, pointing at Maya again,
lost her voice because of what your people did. I must speak for her.
She doesn't want you to speak for her, Adolin shouted. She doesn't want to be here.
Maya continued to push against her captors, increasingly violent. Some of the crowd responded with jeers toward Adolin. Others muttered and gestured toward Maya.
Does it make you uncomfortable? Sekir demanded of Adolin. Convenient now for you to care about what she wants. Well, I can read her emotions. That thrashing? It is the pain of someone who remembers what was done to her. She condemns you, Adolin Colin.
Maya's cries grew louder. Frantic, guttural, they weren't proper shouts. They were the pained anguish of someone who had forgotten how to speak, but still needed to give voice to her agony.
"This poor creature,"
Sekir shouted over the increasing din,
"condemns you with each groan. She is our final witness, for hers is the pain we must never forget. Listen to her demand your punishment, Adolin Colin. She was innocent, and your kind murdered her. Listen to her cry for blood."
Maya's shouts grew louder and more raw. Some honor spren in the crowd pulled back, and others covered their ears, wincing. Adolin had heard that scream before, the time he'd tried to summon her as a blade while in Shadesmar.
"She's in pain!"
Adolin shouted, lunging forward. The spren watching him, however, had been waiting for this. They grabbed him and held him tight.
"Let her go, you bastard! Your point is made!" "My point cannot be made strongly enough," Sekir shouted. "It must be repeated over and over. You will not be the only traitor who comes with a smile begging to exploit us. My people must stay firm, must remember this moment for their own good. They need to see what humans did."
Maya's voice grew louder, gasping breaths punctuated by ragged howls. And in that moment, Adolin felt her pain somehow. A deep agony. And anger? Anger at the honor spren.
"They trusted you," Sekir said, "and you murdered them."
She clawed at the hands, trying to free herself, her teeth flashing as she twisted her scratched-out eyes one way, then the other. Yes, Adolin could feel that agony as if it were his own. He didn't know how, but he could.
"Listen to her," Sekir said. "Accept her condemnation." "Let her go," Adolin shouted.
He struggled, then went limp.
"Storms, just let her go." "I refuse judgment," Sekir said. "I don't need to give it. In the end, her testimony is the only one needed. Her condemnation is all we ever needed. Listen to her shouts. Remember them as you rot, Adolin Colin. Remember what your kind did to her. Her screams are your judgment."
Maya's howls came to a crescendo of anguish. Then she fell silent, gasping for breath. Weak. Too weak. "Take it," Adolin thought to her. "Take some of my strength." She looked right at him, and despite her scratched-out eyes, she saw him. Adolin felt something, a warmth, deep within him. Maya drew in air, filling her lungs. Her expression livid as she gathered all of her strength, she prepared to shout again. Adolin braced himself for the screech. Her mouth opened, and she spoke.
"We chose!"
The two words rang through the forum, silencing the agitated honor spren. Sekir, standing with his back to her, hesitated. He turned to see who had interrupted his dramatic speech. Panting, hunched forward in the grip of her captors, Maya managed to repeat her words.
We chose.
Sekir stumbled away. The hands holding Adolin went slack as the honor spren stared in shock. Adolin pulled free and crossed the stage. He shoved aside the startled Amuna and supported Maya, putting her arm across his shoulder to hold her up as he would a wounded soldier. She clung to him, stumbling as she struggled to remain upright. Even as she did, however, she whispered it again.
"We chose,"
she said, her voice ragged as if she had been shouting for hours.
"Adolin, we chose."
"Blood of my fathers," Adolin whispered.
"What is this?"
Sekir said.
"What have you done to her? The sight of you has caused her to rave in madness and—"
He cut off as Maya pointed at him and released a terrifying screech, her jaw lowering farther than it should. Sekir put his hand to his chest, eyes wide as her screech transformed into words.
"You cannot," have my sacrifice, she shouted. Mine, my sacrifice, not yours,
she pointed at the crowd.
Not theirs,
she pointed at Adolin.
Not his, mine, my sacrifice.
You knew what was going to happen when the Radiants broke their oaths, Adolin said. They didn't murder you. You decided together. She nodded vigorously.
All this time, Adolin
said, his voice louder for the audience,
everyone assumed you were victims. We didn't accept that you were partners with the Radiants. We chose,
she hissed. Then, belting it out loud as an anthem,
we chose!
Adolin helped her step over to the first row of benches, and the honor spren sitting there scrambled out of the way. She sat, trembling, but her grip on his arm was fierce. He didn't pull away. She seemed to need the reassurance. He looked around at the crowd, then toward Sekir and the other eldest honor spren seated near the judge's bench. Adolin didn't speak, but he dared them to continue condemning him. He dared them to ignore the testimony of the witness they'd chosen, the one they'd pretended to give the power of judgment. He let them mull it over. He let them think. Then they began to trail away. Haunted, perhaps confused, the honor spren began to leave. The elders gathered around Sekir, who remained standing, dumbfounded, staring at Maya. They pulled him away, speaking in hushed, concerned tones. They didn't touch Adolin. They stayed far from him, from Maya, until eventually a single person remained in the stands. A female spren in a black suit, her skin faintly tinged with an oily rainbow. Blended stood up, then picked her way down the steps.
I should like to take credit, she said, for your victory in what everyone assumed was an unwinnable trial. But it was not my tutelage or your boldness that won this day.
Maya finally let go of Adolin's arm. She seemed stronger than before, though her eyes were still scratched out. He could feel her curiosity, her awareness. She looked up at him and nodded. He nodded back.
Thank you.
Strength, she whispered.
Strength
before weakness. She nodded again, then turned her scratched-out gaze toward the ground, exhausted.
I don't intend to forget that you testified against me, Adolin said to Blended. You played both sides of this game.
It was the best way for me to win, she said, inspecting Maya. But you should know that I suggested to the Honor Spren elders that they use your Deadeye as a witness. They were aware of the legal provision that allowed them to speak for her.
Then her pain is your fault? Adolin demanded.
I did not suggest that they treat her with such callousness, Blended said. Their act is their own, as is their shame. But admittedly, I knew how they might act. I wanted to know if a truth exists, the one you said to me.
Adolin frowned, trying to remember.
That she spoke, Blended reminded him, to you. That friendship exists between you. I sought proof, and found that her name, recorded in old documents of Spren treaties, is, as you said. A curious fact to find, indeed.
Blended strolled around Adolin and studied Maya's face.
Still scratched out, she said, though a bond between you is.
I'm no Radiant, Adolin said.
No, that is certain.
Maya met Blended's gaze.
But something is happening. I must leave this place at last and return to the Inkspren. If the words this Deadeye spoke are...
If what she said is true,
Adolin said. Then you have no further excuse for refusing humankind the bonds they need.
Don't we? Blended asked. For centuries my kind told ourselves an easy lie, yes, that humans had been selfish, that humans had murdered. But easy answers often are, so we can be excused. This truth, though, means a greater problem is. Thousands of Spren chose death instead of letting the Radiance continue. Does this not worry you more? They truly believed that, as humans claimed at the time, surge binding would destroy the world, that the solution was to end the orders of Radiance, suddenly, at the cost of many lives.
Did you know the full cost, Maya? Adolin asked, the question suddenly occurring to him. Did you and your Radiance know that you would become Deadeyes? Adolin felt Maya searching deep, pushing through her exhaustion, seeking memories that were difficult for her to access. Eventually, she shook her head and whispered,
Pain, yes. Death, no. Maybe.
Adolin sat beside her, letting her lean against him.
Why, Maya? Why were you willing to do it? To save. Save.
She sagged and shook her head.
To save us from something worse,
Adolin said, then looked to Blended.
What does it mean?
It means we've had all of this terribly wrong for much time, High Prince Adolin, she said, and my own stupidity is. I have always thought myself smart.
She shook her head as she stood before them, arms folded.
What an effective test. Very effective.
This? Adolin said, waving to the empty forum. This was a complete and utter farce.
I meant a different test, Blended said. The true trial. The one you've been engaging in for the last few years. The test for this Spren's loyalty. She was the only judge who ever mattered, and today was her chance to offer judgment.
Blended leaned forward.
You passed.
With that, she turned to go and strode up the steps, her stark onyx coloring making her seem a shadow with no accompanying body.
Easy answers no longer are, she said. But if Deadeyes can begin to return, this is grand news, important news. I will convey this to my people. I do not know if making new Radiance is a good idea, but I must admit that your ancestors were not traitors. Something did frighten them enormously to cause humans and Spren to destroy their bonds. And if the Spren did not know they would die, then pieces of this puzzle are still missing. The questions are more complicated and more dangerous than we ever knew.
With that, Blended left. Adolin let Maya rest for a few minutes. When he finally stood up, she joined him. She followed him as she normally did, expressionless and mild, but he could feel that she was not as insensate as she'd been. She was conserving energy. She wasn't healed, but she was better. And when he had needed her, she had been willing to struggle through death itself to speak for him. No, he thought. She spoke for herself. Don't make the same mistake again. He needed to find Shallan and head to the Oathgate so they could share what he'd learned. Maybe the Honor Spren would swallow their pride and help. Maybe they would, as Blended said, find other reasons to fear. Either way, he suspected the Radiant relationship would never be the same again.
95. What she truly was. 14 months ago. Venli scrambled through a nightmare of her own making. Beneath a blackened sky, humans and listeners fought with steel and lightning. She heard screams more often than commands. And beneath it all, a new song. A song of summoning, joined by thousands of voices. The Everstorm was coming,
building to a crescendo as the listeners called it. She'd imagined this day as an organized effort by the listeners, led by her. Instead, there was chaos, war, and death. She did not join in the singing. She splashed through deep puddles, seeking to escape. The weeping rains streamed down, soft but persistent. She passed listeners she recognized, all standing in a line, their eyes glowing red as they sang. "Faraday," she said to one of them. "We have to get away. The humans are sweeping in this direction." He glanced at her, but continued singing. The whole line seemed completely oblivious to the rain, and mostly oblivious to her words. She attuned panic. They were overwhelmed by the new form, consumed by it. She felt that same impulse, but was able to resist. Perhaps because of her long association with Ulim? She wasn't certain. Venli hurried away, looking over her shoulder. She couldn't make out much of what was happening on the battlefield. It stretched across multiple plateaus, veiled in mist and rain, shadowed by pitch-black clouds. Occasional bursts of red lightning showed that many of the new storm forms were fighting. Hopefully they could control their powers better than Venli could. When she had released the energy of storm form, expecting grand attacks that smote her foes, the lightning had gone in wild directions, unpredictable. She didn't think she had hurt a single human, and now she felt limp, the glorious energy expended, and slow to renew. She hid by a large lump of rock that might have been a building long ago. Behind her, humans attacked the line of listeners she'd left. She heard screams, felt a crack as lightning was released. Their song did not start again, but she heard humans cursing and talking in their crude tongue, voices echoing over the sound of the rain. More dead. The storm was building, yes, nearly upon them. But how many listeners would be slaughtered before it arrived? Surely the other battlefronts are doing better, she thought, squeezing her eyes closed and listening to the rhythm of panic. Surely the listeners are winning. What of Ulim's promises? What of Venli's throne? She breathed in cold air, water streaming along the sides of her face, leaving her skin numb and her carapace chilled. She pressed against the rocks, trembling. It was all wrong. She wasn't supposed to be here. She was supposed to be safe. The sound of boots scraping stone made her open her eyes in time to see a spear coming at her. She lunged to the side, but the weapon struck across the ridges of her cheek and nose, cutting only a thin slice in her skin, mostly deflecting off the carapace mask Stormform had given her face. She fell to the ground in a puddle and tried to pull away, one hand out and pleading. The human loomed over her, a terrible figure with his features completely lost in the shadows of his helm. He raised his spear. "No, no," Venli said to subservience in his language. "Please, no. I'm scholar. No weapon. Please, no." He brandished his spear, but as she cringed, turning aside her face, no blow came. The man stepped away, then jogged off, joining some of his fellows who were forming up against an approaching group with glowing red eyes. Venli felt at the scrape the spear had caused, amazed at how little it had wounded her. Then she felt at her skin, her clothing. He'd just left her alone, as she'd asked. She stared after the man, attuning derision. The fool didn't know how important a listener he'd spared. He should have killed her. Derision seemed to fade, though, as she considered. Was that the proper rhythm, the proper feeling she should feel upon being saved? What had happened to her these last few years? What had she let happen to her? For a moment, she heard the rhythm of appreciation instead. Part of her, it seemed, didn't want to bask in the glory of the new form. Part of her longed for the comforts of the familiar when she'd been weak. "And this is strength?" she thought, as she picked herself up off the ground, listening to the thunder. The new storm was approaching. It would save them, exterminating the humans and elevating the listeners who survived. She simply had to make certain she was one of them. She scurried away to search out a stronger group of listeners to protect her. She entered an open section of plateau, slick with water, near one of the chasms. Bands of humans and listeners roamed along the edge of the chasm here, trying to get an upper hand against one another. If anything, the fighting in this area was more horrifying. She forcibly attuned conceit and moved along the perimeter. Conceit, a good rhythm, a counterpart to determination or confidence, only grander. Conceit was a proud, strong rhythm with a surging fanfare of quick, complex, and bold beats. That was how she needed to feel. This was her battlefield. She'd crafted this. She'd brought it all together. There was nothing to fear here. This was her victory celebration. She passed one of the humans' dead horses, a Rashadium by the size. It had been killed by lightning, so at least some of her people were capable of controlling their new abilities. Ahead, illuminated by scattered light through a patch of clouds, she saw two brilliant figures fighting along the edge of the chasm. Shard-bearers. Venli didn't know the human, but the listener was Eshonai. She was the last of their shard-bearers. The plate was distinctive, even if the new form had changed her. It was hard to associate the terrible warlord Eshonai had become with the thoughtful femalein who had tried so hard to find a way out of the war. Venli stopped beside a broken spire of rock and hunkered down, watching through the rain as the two clashed. Eshonai, particularly the enhanced Eshonai, could handle a duel on her own. Venli would just be in the way. She was able to tell herself this and believe it, right up until Eshonai was shoved off the rim of the chasm. One moment she was holding her own against the human. The next, she was gone, plunged into the abyss. Venli watched her go with a feeling of disconnect. In Shardplate, Eshonai could survive that fall, probably. Venli was the one in danger, with the human shard-bearer nearby. The new rhythms thrummed through her, whispering of power, heightening her emotions. She was herself, not overly influenced by the form, in control, not a slave. Yet she felt nothing. For a form that seemed so vibrant with emotions, that was wrong. Could the old Venli have watched her sister take a potentially deadly fall without so much as a sorrowful rhythm? Strange. Why no concern? What was happening to her? Venli withdrew. She'd go find Eshonai later, help get her out of the chasm. They could attune amusement together as they thought of Venli, a simple scholar, doing anything to help in a fight between two shard-bearers. The battlefield decayed further as Venli sought refuge. Screams, lightning blasts. She saw in it something more terrible than just a clash over the future of their peoples. She saw something that enjoyed the killing. A force that seemed to be growing with the new storm. A force that loved passion, anger, any emotion, but especially those that came when people struggled. Emotion was never stronger than when someone died. This force sought it, craved it. Venli felt its presence like a building miasma, more oppressive than the rain clouds or the storm. She crept among some large rock formations, lumps that had been buildings, now blanketed by thick creme. She wasn't certain where she was in relation to the center of Narak. Fortunately, she found a narrow fissure between the ancient buildings. She squeezed in, wet and overwhelmed by the building sensation. Something was coming, something incredible, something terrible. The new storm was here. Venli allowed herself to attune the rhythm of her true emotions, the wild, frenetic beat of the rhythm of panic, a more virulent version of the rhythm of the terrors. Everything went black the last few hints of sunlight consumed by the weight of this new storm. Then, red lightning. It electrified the sky, and Venli crouched. No, she was still too exposed. She knew with a sudden, inexplicable confidence that if the storm saw her, it would destroy her. Between bolts of lightning, she pushed out of the cavity of rock and felt her way along the side of the stone building. The winds began to howl. Something else was coming. A high storm, too? Panic almost overwhelmed her. Then, to her incredible relief, her fingers felt something. A hole cut into one of the creme-covered buildings. This was fresh, the cuts unnaturally smooth. A shard-bearer had been here. She eagerly sought refuge inside, trying to banish the rhythm of panic, replace it with something else. Outside, the winds began to clash. She pressed against the rear wall of the small, empty chamber, lit by the increasingly violent flashes of light outside. First red, then white, then the two tangled like fighting great shells, crushing the land around them as they grappled. Debris began